Blog Talk Radio.
Let's talk about the movies. It's Movie Talk. It's Vince. It's Movie Talk with Vince. How's everybody doing? How was your week? Go see any movies? I watched some movies at home. Didn't go to the theaters this weekend or this week. This weekend I just might. I'm not sure, but we'll see. But anyway, so let's talk about the movies. This week I'm going to talk about what I have been watching at home. That is the Mission Impossible film. I'm looking forward to the new one. I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you my opinion on all the other films that Tom Cruise has done as the secret agent Ethan Hunt in the Mission Impossible film. That's right. That's tonight. Mission Impossible here on Movie Talk with Vince. All right, let's get things started here. And before I do, remember, as always, if you want to call in, there's a guest call-in number. That's right. You can join in the chat, too. Tell me what you think about Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible, whatever. The number is 914-205-5404. That's right. One more time. 914-205-5404. Give me a call. Let me know. I'll put you on the air. We'll talk about Mission Impossible. Or maybe you want to talk about something else. Hey, that's okay. Give me a call. Let me know what you feel like. But remember, this is Movie Talk here. We're not going to be talking about anything other than movies. And preferably Mission Impossible this week. So anyway, so give me a call. And also, as always, a little bit of housekeeping here. Don't forget, you're going to hear opinions. Probably mine, unless someone else calls in and they want to tell me theirs. I know a friend. Maybe I'll just tell you somebody else's opinion that I've heard. You never know. But anyway, so beware. You're going to hear opinions. But remember, opinions don't hurt. They're just opinions, and they're subject to change. If I think something and you don't, hey, that's the way life is. Life works that way. Believe it or not, it does. So that's right. So don't forget, opinions won't hurt, and they're just fun. And also, don't forget, too, spoiler alert, I might be revealing aspects of films that you may not have seen. If you haven't seen all the Mission Impossible films, I might tell you how one of them ends. So beware, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen them yet, then what are you waiting for? Go see them. And as always, remember, don't take my word for it. Go see these movies. Go tell me what you think. Make up your own mind, because your mind is just as good as mine, maybe even better. You never know. But anyway, so let's get things going here with the Mission Impossible. That's right, light the fuse. Alrighty, so let's get things going here. So, alright, we've got a little bit of a thing going on here with our dashboard. Don't know what's going on, but anyway, so let's get going. So, Mission Impossible. So let's, first of all, I will state this for the record, that I am not here to bash Tom Cruise. I'm not here to talk about Tom Cruise as a person. I'm just here to talk about the Mission Impossible film. Now, see, because here's the thing. I don't hate Tom. Yes, he's a little bit of an oddball. I'll admit that. But then again, who isn't? And especially, you know, what actor isn't? I mean, we all go, you know, and any of us who, like myself, who like to go into the theater, go into acting, might not be quite the stablest person in the world. Because, let's face it, we like to go on stage. We, you know, have the need for people to look at us and go, hey, you're awesome. So we're all a little messed up. And Tom is, you know, he's got his own thing going on. But I don't hate him. Yes, I will admit sometimes when I see him in interviews, he does seem a little bit like he's always seeming to be acting or performing or whatever. He doesn't always seem to be the most genuine. But sometimes I think that's just the way he is. I actually think that when we think he's not being genuine, he actually is being genuine, because that's just the way he really is. I do imagine he goes home and he acts exactly the way he does at home as he does on stage. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Never met the guy. And that's fine. But I'm not here to bash him. So if you think, oh, well, I hate the Mission Impossible films because of Tom Cruise or whatever, hey, that's your thing. I like Tom. I think he seems like a cool guy. And if I ever met him, I think he, I mean, I'm not a big fan of his religion. I will admit that. Scientology is not my thing, but hey, whatever. It's his thing, and whatever. I know a lot of people want to bash Scientology because of certain things. That I, again, I'm not a fan of them, so I might be, you know, so whatever. And I know a lot of people want to bash Tom because of Scientology, but hey, you know, whatever. I'm separating out the man from that religion, whatever it is. So Tom seems like a nice guy, seems like a cool guy, and every interview I've seen with him, he seems like – and every person I know who have worked with him has said that he is a genuinely caring person. He's a good guy. So maybe Scientology, I don't know. I'm not – like I said, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about Mission Impossible. So let's go. Let's light that fuse. Can we get the theme going here? Here we go. Love that theme. Okay, so Mission Impossible. So as we all know, Mission Impossible originally started back in, what, the 60s as a television series. And it starred, well, I forget the name of the original star. He later would go on to be the head policeman, the chief of the police on the Law and Order for the longest time. And his name now just completely escaped me. But that's okay. And he was the original. But then, of course, he was replaced by Peter Graves in the second season. And he took that on and became Mr. Phelps, Jim Phelps, who led the Mission Impossible team, the Impossible Mission Force. And the basic premise of the show was that, you know, this they're basically like a secret government agency. When the CIA or whatever couldn't get a job done, they would call on the Impossible Missions Force. And they would and Jim Phelps would get the mission. He would choose to accept it, or always would choose. He was given the option to, you know, if you choose to accept it. Of course, he always did. Otherwise, the episode would be over. So he would always choose to accept the mission, and then he would put together a team who would go in and have to complete this secret mission where they had to retrieve some government document or some person or whatever. And so every week the show was about the intrigue. It wasn't an action show. I mean, yes, it had action in it, but it was a spy show, which was different than, say, you know, a cop drama or something like that. This was a drama. It was a spy adventure. Where they would have some violence in it, sure, but it wasn't like a shootout kind of show where every week there was a car chase and every week there was this. You know, it was basically similar to what the A-Team eventually became, where you had a team who would go out and help people, but whereas the A-Team were a disgraced, you know, military group who would go out and help people nonchalantly or incandescently, or not incandescently, that's the wrong word. You would know what I'm saying. You know what I mean. Under the radar. The Mission Impossible were also under the radar, but they worked for the government, whereas the A-Team did not. And the A-Team were also much more violent than the Mission Impossible Force, or the Impossible Mission Force, or whatever. But every week it was about the intrigue. It was about, ooh, how are they going to trick everybody? And it was all about the sleight of hand. They wore masks. They had special gadgets. It was a spy thing. It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't about the action. It wasn't a violent show. Mostly because it was a show made back in the 60s, and then they did a revival in the 70s. So it was made at a time when you really couldn't do all much violence on TV. Otherwise, the show would have gotten pulled. So there was only so much you could do. Well, then the show went off the air, and it disappeared, and a lot of people tended to forget about it. But a lot of people remembered it, going, oh, I grew up watching Mission Impossible. I love this show. And I think it was a Universal or whatever. It was Universal or Paramount. Paramount Pictures picked up the rights and tried getting a movie going. Because especially once James Bond was still popular after the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, that Paramount was like, well, we have to get our own spy thing going. And they figured, well, what better spy vehicle than Mission Impossible? So they went through director after director, writer after writer, trying to get this going, and eventually got in the hands of Tom Cruise, who by this point, after Top Gun and after Rain Man and Born on the 4th of July, he had amassed such a major popularity that he wanted to start producing his own films. And so he put together his own production company and was looking for a movie to produce. He made a good name for himself, nominated for Oscars, and he was quite, you know, popular at this point. But he hadn't really done any truly action adventure films like this. And so he figured, hey, I love James Bond. I'm not British, so I'll never be up to play James Bond, and nor should I. I think he figured, you know, James Bond, like most people, feel Bond should remain British. So as American actors, we're always looking to go, well, rather than us playing a Brit, because sometimes when an American plays a Brit, it doesn't always work. I mean, let's face it. I love Robert Downey Jr. as Sherlock Holmes, but when I watch the movie, to me, it's an American actor playing, doing a British accent. Whereas on the other hand, most British actors do American accents so darn well, you forget. You forget that Christian Bale was born in Wales, I'm pretty sure. And he has a thickest Welsh accent when he talks in real life, but when he's on playing Americans with a perfect American accent. So you forget it. But I don't know, maybe just for me, I'm so used to seeing certain American actors that when they play British, it just doesn't look right. So for, you know, Tom, he said, yeah, I'm not going to be – everybody knows I'm American. They're not going to buy me as a Brit. So what can I do? What American spy vehicle could I do? And he loved Mission Impossible, found out that Paramount owned the rights, so he made a deal with them. So can I do it? And, you know, they're like, sure, you're not going to direct it. Like, no. Because, you know, Tom likes to talk fast. He's like, no. I'm going to be in the movie. I'll star in it. They're like, okay, we're sold. And I'll produce it. Okay, we're sold. And I'll pick the director, and it'll be good. Okay. So for the first film, he got Brian De Palma, who was a top-notch director. Unfortunately, Brian's star, shall I say, has kind of faded in years, and it's kind of a shame because he came out in the 70s with Spielberg and Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese, all these great directors, and he was part of that group who was directing some great movies like Carrie and so many others. But, you know, Carrie was always probably my favorite that he directed. And, by the time the 90s came around, Brian's films weren't really knocking him dead anymore. I think I remember the last movie he made before Mission Impossible was a Nicolas Cage movie called Snake Eyes, which I remember being rather not memorable. I think I remember watching it at the end of the movie going, well, that was okay. I mean, I didn't hate it. I mean, I didn't think it was a terrible movie, but it certainly wasn't, you know, a great movie. That I walked out of the theater going, oh, my God, I can't wait to see that again. Oh, my God, this was so great. Did you remember this scene, or do you remember? Yeah, it was one of those movies you went, oh, okay. What else is on the menu? You know, it wasn't – I mean, I honestly can't – all I remember about that movie was that it was set in Vegas, and the first movie I remember seeing Carla Gugino in. And I remember thinking, wow, she's great. And she's – remember, I thought she was better than Nicolas Cage in the film. Because I just remember saying, wow, she's beautiful. Who is this actress? She's great. She's really good. Anyway, so at that time, Brian De Palma, he was still a name, but he wasn't making blockbuster films anymore. So Tom basically gave him his last really big film. And it's not his last film. Brian has still directed other movies since then, but this was the last really big movie that he did. And the Mission Impossible film came out, and it was huge. And I just watched it. I just watched all the films. And I have to say, on a scale of 1 to 10, I give it an 8 because it has the prerequisite type of violence, but that's not over-the-top violence. Action, a little over-the-top, but not too much. The story goes along at a great pace. Brian De Palma is a great director. He directs it well. Tom Cruise steps into the role perfectly. And overall, it's a great movie. But the reason why I can't give it a 9 or a 10 is because of, and I agree with the original actors, I'm not crazy about the way they treated the character of Jim Phelps. Now, as I said, Peter Graves played Jim Phelps in the original show, and he was the leader of the Mission Impossible Force, the Impossible Mission Force, whatever. And he was the leader. He was a good guy. He was your hero every week. And spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen it, in Mission Impossible, the first film, they decided to do a switcheroo and make him the villain. So at first you're thinking there's no way, you know, he could be the villain, so you wonder who could it be. And when it turns out to be our hero, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And a lot, and Peter Graves was offered the role. He turned it down. He said, no, I don't want to become the villain. And a lot of the other actors in the show were offered cameos, and they said no. They turned it down for the same reason. They didn't want to see Jim Phelps treated that way. He was a hero. Why would you make him the villain? And so they didn't like that. Now, personally, I think it is an interesting story, and it's a cool twist. I like that. But it is also – I also get the fact that kind of like watching a James Bond movie and casting Sean Connery as the villain. It's like, well, he's James Bond. He's the hero. You don't – you know, he's not the bad – why would you make him the bad guy? But turning – like you have him turn to the dark side. It's kind of an interesting story. So kind of back and forth. I think the mission – for me, the first film is a very interesting film, and it's the least – violent of all of them. It has its share of violence because it is an action film, but it's not really that violent. And I do think it is interesting to make the hero the villain. I'm not exactly sure if the writers really gave him a good enough reason to turn, so that's my biggest problem with the first film. But overall, it's still a fun movie, and it has the intrigue. It's a spy film. It hits all the right buttons. If you're okay with that twist. Other than that, it's great. So then they followed it up with Mission Impossible 2 because they figured, well, we got a hit thing going here. Got to keep it going. So they brought in now John Woo to direct. And I like that John Woo changed it around, but to me, Mission Impossible 2 is the least Mission Impossible of the films because John Woo turns it into a revenge kind of, you know, Asian adventure type of movie. And my biggest thought, that's not really what Mission Impossible is. It didn't have the same kind of intrigue. It's a great movie, but it's not really a Mission Impossible film. And in this one, for some reason, Tom Cruise has long hair. And it doesn't really fit with the character, in my opinion. And it has a lot of slow-mo effects, a lot of stuff. There's a lot of John Woo stuff in it. And it's a cool action film, but it doesn't really feel like a Mission Impossible film for me. So if I'm going to rate this one, I give it a 7 because it is a great action film and it is a cool story, but a lot of it doesn't really connect as well as it probably could. And the story gets a little bit lost amidst all of the big action. Like the action becomes more important, shall I say, than the story. And I think that's really where the film is a fault. So I give that one a 7, because it's not bad. It's just doesn't really feel like a Mission Impossible film to me. So that was followed up immediately by Mission Impossible 3. And with Mission Impossible 3, they brought in, Tom needed, we need to get back to what we did and get away from 2. So he cut his hair again. Now he has short hair again. And they tried to get back to it being about the intrigue. And so with Mission Impossible 3, they came up with one of the best villains, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. Not one of his last roles, but sadly, not too far away. And he just steals the show. He's probably the best villain out of all of them in the first three films, without a doubt. And he is seriously dangerous. You really are afraid for him. And the story is really interesting. My only criticism of 3, actually, would probably be that J.J. Abrams, the director and writer, his big thing is he loves throwing in what they call in film a MacGuffin. A MacGuffin is something that helps the plot along, moves the plot along, but the identity of it is not important. In the second Mission Impossible film, it was about this thing called the Chimera. It was a disease and the cure, and that it's important to move the plot along. But in the end, you don't really need to know what it is. It doesn't really matter. And in 3, they come up with a thing called the monkey, the rabbit's foot. But they never tell you what it is. And at the end of the movie, Tom Cruise doesn't even know what it is. And he's not even told. And that's a kind of a little joke with J.J. Abrams. He likes doing it, like throwing in something and then having no idea what it is himself. He did that with Star Wars, then with Star Trek. And he kind of pissed Star Wars fans off by doing that. But in the end, he does that. But overall, Mission Impossible 3 is, to me, the best of the original three because the villain is really strong. The story really fits together. It's the first time we're introduced to the character of Benji. And overall, the movie just works. And it's probably, in my opinion, J.J. Abrams' best film. After that, he kind of got a little weird with what he did with Star Trek and then with Star Wars. But overall, to me, that's his best film, is Mission Impossible 3. So then they took a break. Tom was like, I'm done. I'm going to do other stuff. And he did other stuff. But I think he realized that he missed doing Mission Impossible. He loved it. Plus, it was probably his biggest money-making film. So he went back with Mission Impossible 4, which was, what, Rogue Nation? The fourth one? Rogue Nation. Yes, Rogue Nation. I had to think about it for a second. Rogue Nation. And this time they bring in Jeremy Renner as the new character. And the films, for me, just keep getting better. The story in for Ghost Protocol was really good. Once again, my biggest problem with the Mission Impossible films, I will say, is that they keep reusing the plot line where the team, or at least Tom, is disavowed. And this time, once again, they're disavowed. They have to go into Ghost Protocol, where they have to do everything as rogues. Okay. But still, overall, it's a really cool story. And the action is great. And Tom, at this point, is now going, I'm doing my own stunt. And each movie now, you're thinking, is Tom going to survive? Because he's doing these stunts, and it's like, how on earth, you know, can he do that? Even stuntmen are looking and going, yeah, even I wouldn't do that. And I do this for a living. Now, this guy's just an actor, and he's outdoing what we do. The guy's insane. And so I think Rogue Nation was an improvement over 3, which I thought was great, because it had a really cool story. It still is action, still has its violence in it, but it's not nearly as violent as 2, which I think is the most violent out of all of them. It does have its fair share of shootouts and car chases, because it's an action film. But it's a really cool story. And what I also like about it is the acting in it is surprisingly good for this type of movie. You would not expect some of the scenes that you get in Rogue Nation. And then, of course, that was followed up by Rogue Nation. Yeah, Ghost Protocol. That's right, Ghost Protocol. Rogue Nation is the next one. Right? Right, yes. 5 is Rogue Nation. They get confused in the title. So, yeah, Ghost Protocol was part 4. Part 5 is Rogue Nation. And in Rogue Nation, it's where they introduce, or shall I say reintroduce, a villain known as the Syndicate. It's a group. Now, in the James Bond movies, they had a group called Spectre that James Bond was always going up after until Sean Connery retired. And then when Roger Moore came on board, they got rid of Spectre. And then they brought Spectre back with Daniel Craig. But in the Mission Impossible television series, they were always going up against a group called the Syndicate. And so they brought the Syndicate back now for the film Rogue Nation. Well, first, at the end of Ghost Protocol, they're mentioned, and then in Rogue Nation, now he's going after them. And we find out who their leader is, and that they're this basically Mission Impossible force, but they're polar opposite. They're created by the British, they weren't meant to really be created. They were kind of created by mistake. And next thing you know, now they're on their own, and they're wreaking havoc, and they're trying to destroy the world. So Tom and his team have to go after them. And again, I think that the introduction of them really goes up the notch. That's probably what I'm trying to say. Ups the ante, or that's what I'm trying to say. And gets the story really going in a really interesting way. And again, Tom's acting is spot on. His team are excellent. Benji's back. Ving Rhames is back. Everybody's back. Most everybody. Jeremy Renner is back. And it's great. I mean, I keep watching movies going, I don't understand how, because in essence, part 4, Ghost Protocol, is a reboot, because the series is done after the third one. After the third one, Tom wasn't expecting to do anymore. I think he was going to take a break. But then they came back with the fourth one, and so the fourth one, in many ways, is a reboot, but they decided just to do a sequel after an extended period of time. And boom, he came back. It was a big hit, and critics loved it. I loved it. I thought, wow, the fourth one is actually even better than the third one. I thought the third one was great. And so then like, well, let's keep going. Let's continue on. So they do a fifth one. And the fifth one is actually even an improvement over that. I actually thought that in this, the stunts, the story, everything about the fifth one is really great. So then it's like, okay, well, we introduced the syndicate. Now we have to continue that on. So the last one, Fallout, was really, to me, one of the most interesting stories out of all of them because, you know, once again, Tom and his team are going up against now the syndicate. But in the last one, they captured the guy. You think that they destroyed that team. But now, you know, the last one, the title is perfect because it's about the fallout of that, like what happens next. And, you know, and the fact that, yeah, you think they saved the day, but they did. But it reminds me of the song After the Fire by Pete Townshend, or actually by Roger Daltrey. Pete Townshend wrote it, both of the Who. Roger Daltrey recorded it for a solo album. But in the song, Pete Townshend wrote the chorus is, you know, after the fire, the fire still burns. And that's really what happens with this, is the fact that, yes, they defeated the syndicate, but they're still there. There's still remnants of it still around. And it's maybe even got worse now because they chopped off its head. And now it's gotten, you know, out of control. Now they have to, you know, defeat it again and again. And so that's one of the reasons why. So now I'm really looking forward to the new one because, to me, the last one is now actually the best one out of them all. They keep getting better. And I can't imagine how that's possible. So the next one, as I said before in the previous show, I'm not really crazy about the title, Dead Reckoning, only because, to me, you know, George Romero is going to use that title for one of his Grateful Dead, Night of the Living Dead films. But to me, whenever I hear Dead Reckoning, I think of a horror movie. I think of, you know, Walking Dead. So hopefully now when this film comes out, it'll make us forget about all that. But most of what he's doing now is for the next one, it's going to be a long film. So he split it in half. He's going to release part one this year and part two next year. So we're going to have to wait a whole year to find out how it all ends. But I think this is it. Thomas said, he's not, you know, the 40-year-old man he was when he first started this. He's getting up there. He still looks great. He's still able to do the stunts, but I think he wants to end them before he can't. And this is probably going to be it. And then it also gives him a chance to move on and do something different. And who knows, if he went to the Academy Award this year for Top Gun 2, which I think is possible but would be, like, crazy. But, you know, if he does, then he definitely probably is going to be like, I don't want to do Mission Impossible anymore, or at least not for a while. And then in 5 years he'll go, I changed my mind, I'm going to do another one. Or pass the torch on, so this way they can still make Mission Impossible films. But anyway, so I'm looking forward to it. Dead Reckoning should be pretty cool. As I said, I love the last one. Fallout, because another thing, too, that I find really interesting about them, and one thing I love about movies like the Lethal Weapon films, is the continuity. Because Tom is the producer on all of them, he hasn't recast any characters. If a character isn't in it, they explain why he's not there, gone. But there is in it. It's the same actor who's played them all the way, and he's tried to keep it, he's trying not to forget certain storylines. Like, for example, in part three, they decided to have the guy get married and have him fall in love. Well, that character and that actress keeps coming back. Even though it's not in big roles, they do remember that, yes, he had a wife, and they explain now why she's not around anymore. And in the last one, she actually comes back at the end in a fairly big way. And shows you, and so it's still part of the storyline. It's not like one of those things where you're watching the movie and go, hey, wasn't he married? Whatever happened to his wife? Oh, no, now they just kind of forgot about it. But anyway, so that's it. So I'm looking forward to Dead Reckoning, so when that comes out. And that's it. So, yeah, the Mission Impossible films are a lot of fun for me. So, you know, if you haven't seen them, definitely go check them out. So anyway, so this has been me. This has been Vince. Going to wrap things up now. Next week, I think I'll talk about movies. What do you think? Think that's a good topic to talk about? I think so. Anyway, so have a great night, everybody. Have a great week. And as always, don't take my word for it. Go check out the movies. They're lots of fun. Everybody, have a good night, everybody, and I'll talk to you soon. All right. Have a great night. And what did he get? Dashboard's not really working. Oh, whatever. Anyway, so have a great night, everybody. Take care.